This is Across the Streams Media Podcast.
Enjoy a typical afternoon in New York City.
Who is it?
Groceries, man.
My name is Paul Kersey. How's my wife?
I'm sorry. She died a few minutes ago, Mr. Kersey.
Any chance of catching these men?
There's a chance, sure.
Just a chance.
I'd be less than honest if I gave you more hope, Mr. Kersey.
This is Paul Kersey. This is the story of a man who decided to clean up the most violent town in the world.
Listen, turn around. Give me the money.
He begins where all the super cops leave off.
Mugging has gone down by how much, sir?
$9.50 a week to $4.70, he reported last week.
You understand not too many people know that.
And you want to keep it that way, huh?
Oh, no, we have to keep it that way, Inspector. This whole city would explode.
And if this person is listening to my voice, I urge him in the name of law and order to desist from this one-man crusade and turn himself into the police.
Let's see the money, man.
Call him a mad vigilante. Call him a hero. Either way, he's always on target.
We want you to get out of New York permanently.
Never make a death wish, because a death wish always comes true, and you get to love it.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Burt Reynolds and Charles Bronson podcast. I am your host, Scott White, and what am I talking about this time? I recently did a podcast on the book Bronson's Loose, The Making of the Death Wish Films. If you want to go back and check that out, I would appreciate it. But during that review and reading the book, Brian Garfield, the author of the original Death Wish novel, kept coming up, and it got me interested in the original novel. So that is what I am going to review on this podcast. The original Death Wish novel written by Brian Garfield that came out in 1972. Now, the book I read, it corresponds with the movie that came out starring Bruce Willis. And if you've seen the Bruce Willis Death Wish, you know that the Bruce Willis Death Wish has nothing in common with the Charles Bronson Death Wish. And if you've read the book, you know the book has nothing to do with the Charles Bronson Death Wish. Because there's a sticker on the front that says, now read the film. If you read this book has absolutely zero to do with the Bruce Willis Death Wish, and almost nothing to do with the Charles Bronson Death Wish. When I did the podcast on Bronson's Loose, they interviewed Brian Garfield. He sold the novel to these producers, and they offered him a job to write the screenplay for the movie. But he thought to himself that most of the book takes place in the character's head, and he didn't know how to put that down on paper as a screenplay. So he turned the job down and took another writing job. How do you turn Death Wish into a movie? You basically ignore the book completely and just use the name and a few things in the book. You've got the name and you can still use it. And that's what they did. In the original Death Wish novel, the character's name is Paul Benjamin, not Paul Kersey. They changed it for the movie because there was a character actor called Paul Benjamin, and they didn't want to get him confused They just wanted to avoid confusion. So they changed it to Paul Kersey. They also changed, Charles Bronson was also an architect in the movie. In the novel, the main character is an accountant. The main character is a middle-aged, slightly overweight, slightly balding Jewish accountant. That is the character in the novel, which has nothing to do with Charles Bronson or Bruce Willis. They originally wanted to cast Jack Lemmon in the movie, and after reading the novel, I can 100% see Jack Lemmon in the movie if it was anywhere close to the novel. The novel actually starts after the murder and assault on Paul's wife and daughter. A majority of this book takes place in Paul's head. Brian Garfield said the reason that he couldn't see Death Wish as a movie is the book isn't about violence. The book is how human nature and how humans respond to violence. And that is exactly what the book is, and that is exactly what the movie isn't. Paul gets a call in his office from his son-in-law saying that his wife and daughter have been attacked. So this is like 10, 12 pages in. He gets this call. He rushes to the hospital. Now, something that is close to the book and the movie is Paul's wife dies and his daughter slowly becomes comatose. In the movie, she pretty much goes off the rails. The daughter pretty much goes off the rails after the attack immediately. In the book, it takes some time. In the book, she slowly goes into her depression and becoming comatose. Also, in the book, it is stressed that they were not raped, which in the movie is totally, totally different. There is a graphic rape scene in the movie. But they were just beat up in the book. His wife dies. His daughter has been assaulted. She gets out of the hospital. And then we spend a good portion of the first couple of chapters of Paul dealing with this, trying to come to grips with it. We see his co-workers and his friends and his family offering condolences. We see him and his son-in-law both trying to cope. It's really, at this point, a kitchen sink drama, in my opinion, not an action film. He's going through all these emotions. One thing that is true in both the book and the movie is that Paul starts the book off and the movie off as a liberal, as somebody who's all about change, as somebody who is helping the less fortunate. That is his mindset at the beginning of the novel. We go through the funeral. He's given time off. There's really long scenes of him just being alone in his apartment with his thoughts. There's just this one scene where he takes a shower and he walks around the apartment naked and he thinks to himself, I can't remember the last time I walked around the apartment naked. He's just piecing together what has happened. And I love Charles Bronson, but none of this is addressed in the movie. I don't want to call it an unraveling, but you can see where the other side of the gun control issue starts to creep in with him, with Paul. And we get several chapters of him going back to work. And we get several chapters of him and his son-in-law trying to cope with his daughter and slowly slipping into comatose. Comatose? Slipping into comatose? Slipping into a coma. Let's put it like that. It's really weird. You get a lot of chapters. It's a very short read. It's only 158 pages. It's a very short read that's broken up into very short chapters. And there's just a lot of chapters of just him being in the office, you know, getting condolences from his office workers. You know, and he's in his apartment and he's thinking about going to a gym, you know, learning self-defense, getting into shape. Because it is mentioned that he is out of shape and he is not the prototypical super cop vigilante in this book, which is much more, I think Death Wish would have been, I love Death Wish the movie, but it would have been a totally different movie if it was not an action star like Charles Bronson in the lead. If Jack Lemmon was in that movie, it would have a totally different slant on that movie. The metamorphosis of Paul going from a mild-mannered accountant into a vigilante, you see him battling it on the pages. You see it in his mind. Because, okay, so I'm going to say this book was written in 72, and there is language in this book. The N-word is used quite a bit, and for black people, the F-word is used quite a bit for gay people. That was just how it was written at the time. You know, that's the language they used at the time. And there's chapters where he's walking around and he sees a black person, and then for no reason whatsoever, he just hates that person because they're a black person. But then he thinks to himself, what am I doing? He has done absolutely nothing. There's a vague description, and they think it was a teenage kids, a couple of black kids, and a Puerto Rican kid. So now when he sees a black person, he sees himself hating that person. But then he catches himself. He's like, that person has every right to be on the street as I have if he's doing nothing wrong. And it's the same. He sees a gay couple. And for some reason, they just start to enrage him. He feels that he needs to kill them. But then he thinks to himself, no, they're just gay. They're not muggers. You know, they're not hurting people. To me, that's the most interesting part of the book, is being in Paul's head, having him rationalize what he has to do and what he can't do. Because in another thing that's the same in the book and in the movie is they never find out who did it. They never catch the people who actually did the assault. They're never caught. There's also a scene in Death Wish, the movie, and Death Wish, the book, where for his job, he has to go to Arizona. And that happens in both the movie and the book. However, it's treated very differently in both. In the movie, he meets this character who convinces him that he needs to take the law in his hand, and this character actually gives him a gun. In the book, it's really weird. In this book called Death Wish, there are a couple of chapters where they're just dedicated talking about accounting, since he's an accountant in this book. There are chapters where he is talking to another person or a colleague, and they go over all these tax raises and all this tax information. I'm not going to say I enjoyed it, but I understood it, but it's just like, seeing the movie first, you're just thinking of him blowing away muggers. And here we are talking about accounting and moving money around and, you know, money displacement. And while he's in Arizona, he has a one-night stand. That sort of came out of nowhere. The character in the book, because always in the character in the book, they have more time, he is much more fleshed out. In the movie, we basically see Charles Bronson as the good guy. In here, you can see his faults, or you can see his line of thinking. In the movie, it's just like, kill muggers. RoboCop or the Terminator, just kill muggers. In here, you hear his thoughts, what he should do, what he shouldn't do. What if I get caught? How do I hide the gun? Because that's one thing. Because he buys a gun in Arizona. And here's the thing. This must be the 70s. Because he buys a gun in Arizona, hides it in his briefcase, his carry-on luggage, and he's able to get that gun back to New York. And that is a difference between the book and the movie.
Did you know that over 40% of Americans have a hard time swallowing pills? So when it's time to take your vitamins, large capsules and pills are out of the question. We know that gummy vitamins exist, but they're full of sugar, they get stuck in your teeth, and they only contain a fraction of the nutrients you need. Luckily, Easy Melts has discovered the ultimate vitamin sweet spot. Vitamins that melt in your mouth, taste like a treat, and are packed with nutrients ready for absorption, all without an ounce of sugar. For a limited time, Easy Melts is giving listeners a free 3-month supply of vitamin D3 with their first purchase. To claim your free D3 vitamins, visit try.easymelts.com/spring24. That's try.melts.com/spring24. Say goodbye to the old way of taking your vitamins and say hello to the easy way.
Paul Kersey, Charles Bronson, in the movie doesn't know that this guy has given him a gun, so it's not registered to him. In the book, he had to buy the gun. So now the gun is registered to him. And that's something that keeps running through his mind in the book. The gun is registered to me. Because after he starts killing people, they have the shells. So they have the ballistics. And if they find the gun, they can match the bullets up to the gun. And if they match the bullets up to the gun, he is the registered owner. That was something that he didn't have to worry about in the movie. He doesn't own the gun. You know, besides just finding the gun on them, you know, there's no paperwork. And that, I guess that's sort of ironic, him being an accountant, that he is worried about the paperwork that might get him arrested if it comes out. And I will say this, the killing, when he starts shooting the muggers, it's secondary in the book. One or two lines. He'll go into great detail describing the night, describing how he feels. And then the last line is that, and then he ended up shooting a mugger. And that's it. This is the mind of Paul Benjamin. That's what the book is. The killings are secondary. The effect that these people who killed his wife they're having on him, that is the driving force behind the book. That is what we get into. We find out, you know, eventually it comes out that there might be a vigilante in town. In the movie, they assign police officers. There's a lot of scenes with police officers trying to track down the vigilante. In the book, it's just news stories and newspaper clippings. That's how we find out what's going on. And that's how Paul finds out what's going on. That's how he gets the idea in his head. He has to be more careful because the first time he killed a punk, it was just him. But he realized, I didn't have a disguise. I didn't wear gloves. I did it where everybody could see me. So he becomes a little more stealthy. He buys a reversible coat. He buys gloves. He buys a hat to cover his face. Because in the movie, it's just Bronson in a suit killing people. Here, we see him adapting to becoming a vigilante, what he has to do to avoid getting caught. There's an elongated chapter where Paul reads an article. They've interviewed a psychiatrist about the mind of the vigilante. And pretty much the psychiatrist pretty much nails Paul Benjamin's personality. He points out that, and I thought this was really interesting, he points out that the vigilante is probably a liberal that has been disillusioned. Because if you were a conservative, you would have groups that you could confide in to help you kill people. That's basically what he says. And he says, but liberal, he can't confide in his liberal friends, so that's why he has to do it alone. And that is another really fine information point you get in the book is, he can't tell anybody, not a soul, because all of his friends are the liberal elite, and all of his friends, nobody would understand him, and nobody would give him the benefit of the doubt. So he had to keep all this to himself. The final couple of chapters, this book ends very abruptly. and spoilers, I guess. Well, whatever. You know, it's 72. I'm not going to worry about spoilers. In the movie, he's just out looking for muggers. He's waiting for muggers to come up to him. In the book, he's antagonizing. There is a scene where he rents a car and uses it as bait, which was used in Death Wish 3. But he's bumping into people. He's purposely trying to get people to mug him so he can shoot them. And there's chapters out there where he just goes out and he doesn't get mugged. And that's another thing. Patrick Stewart once said about the Enterprise, about Star Trek. It's like they've gone on thousands and thousands of adventures. They only film the ones where stuff happens. But not in this book. In this book, we get a few chapters of him just going out and not getting anybody to mug him. We get down to the final couple of chapters. He can't help himself. He's out and he sees these kids on a building and they're throwing bricks onto cars. And he hides in the shadows and he notices one of them is a woman. And I found this very interesting. Is in none of the movies except for Death Wish 3, because at the end of Death Wish 3, that's just a whole, man, that's just a shit show. But in all the other Death Wish movies, he never kills a female mugger or a female villain. He never does that. And in this final chapter, one of the people throwing bricks off the building was a woman. It's three men and a woman, and he shoots the three men, but he doesn't shoot the woman. And I thought that would have been an interesting twist if he did shoot a woman. And maybe it affected him differently than shooting a man. But the woman gets away. The three men are dead. He's confident. He's like, even though the woman got away, she didn't see his face. He turns to leave, and there is a cop there. And the cop looks at him. Paul looks at the cop. The cop tips his hat, turns his back to him, and Paul's like, oh, he's going to let me get away. It just ends with Paul, he's running across a parking lot, he jumps a fence, and he's gone. And that's how the book ends. We all know in the movie, Charles Bronson is shot. They find out that he's the vigilante. They tell him to get out of town. In Death Wish, he is still out there working, and there are cops on his side who appreciate what he has done. So that is Death Wish, the book. And it is totally, totally different from both Death Wish movies. Would I recommend it? I would recommend it. It's interesting to see the seed of the Death Wish films. But if you're expecting a rock'em sock'em, blow'em up book, you are not going to get this. This is more of internal angst of one man who's been pushed to the limit. And I know that sounds corny, but that is exactly what the book is. There's very dry chapters in there, and the action is at a minimum. So if you're approaching the book, I don't know if there is a book about the film screenplay, but if that's what you want, read that. Just where it started, where the idea came from, and why we still had, five Death Wish movies and a remake. This is where it all started, with Brian Garfield, Death Wish in 1972. All right, I know this was a little different. I know this really didn't have anything to do with Bronson, but I thought it was fun, and it was something I wanted to do. I hope you enjoyed it, and we'll see everybody here next time on the Burt Reynolds and Charles Bronson podcast.
To support this podcast, please go to www.patreon.com/ScottWhite and give what you're able. If you're listening on iTunes, please give a review. This should help people find the podcast when they're searching. No matter what services you use to listen, please leave feedback. We always want to improve. Thank you for listening to the Burt Reynolds and Charles Bronson podcast.
Have I told you I love you?
Yes, Dad, you've told me like a billion times.
Honey? Can you please come down here? Oh. Joy! Run!
Something has happened. You can't go in there.
Dad, where's Mom?
I love my family. I failed to protect them.
I'm sorry, Dr. Kersey, nothing yet.
So there's nothing that I can do? Is that what you're saying?
You can have faith.
How'd faith work out for them?
If a man really wants to protect what's his, he has to do it for himself.
The men who did it are out there. I'm gonna hunt them down. One by one.
I had homies in the 7th grade doing gun trades out at the dock.
We're closed, pal.
You're Joey, right?
Yeah.
Well, kill my wife!
Who else was there?
I don't know anything else.
You're not gonna kill me.
No.
Jack is.
Can't deny me now.
You got caught in some crossfire?
Yeah. He said next time it ain't gonna be my leg.
You are gonna be all right, I promise.
On a mission, no other way they can stop me now.
You're not a cop!
Somebody has to do it!
Step away, you can't take the heat on the battleground.
Everybody's watching this viral video. Is this dude right for taking the law into his own hands?
Hey! Is he a hero?
He saved my life.
Or is it wrong?
You're cocked, locked, and ready to rock.
I'll say. Someone took my wife. Everyone involved is going to pay.
You look much better getting out socializing.
Not so much.
Well, whatever you're doing, keep it up.
Okay, I will.
This has been a Cross the Streams Media Podcast.